to the glass back in nice sunlight like this. I'm gonna turn it to G for me.
Come on, Paint, help.
Besides this, my wife and I have a lot of fun traveling around. Why don't you, first of all, can you tell me where and when you were born?
I was born on the 29th of September, 1897.
You and Amelia were almost exactly the same age.
Oh, yeah, well, she and I were twins.
She was just a few months older than you. Everybody thinks she was born in 98, but she was really born in 97.
She was quite a girl.
Where did you first run into
Amelia? Well, where I got acquainted when she would bring her airplane in for service. I worked in the service department at Lockheed at that time, servicing all airplanes that were returned for service. And in those days, of course, they were the wooden type that was long before her Electra. And
that would be the Vega?
That would be the Vega, yes. She had a Lockheed Vega. And that was where I met her and where I got acquainted with her. And anything that she wanted, any changes she wanted made or anything like that, why, of course, I was able to take care of them for her. You got it turned off now?
I can turn it off if you want.
Well, I don't let a long stringy in there. What else you wanted me to say about it?
Well, when did you go to work for Lockheed?
When? Mm-hmm. In about 1927. I worked on about the second Lockheed Vega that was built, and I worked on all the wooden jobs up until the time that the company disbanded. And at the last, there was two of us left that worked for the original company, myself and Todd Oviatt. And then the new regime came in and took over and started. The first thing they built was the Electra.
That was Gross?
That was Gross, yes. And at that particular time, I was over at Van Nuys because in between there wasn't anything doing, and Todd Oviatt and myself went to Van Nuys and rented a hangar, and we had all the Lockheeds that were out flying at that time coming in to us for service, because at that time the Lockheed didn't have a service department, and we took care of all the service. And we, after about a year, why, Lockheed started to accumulate some facilities and eventually hired me back, and I come back in and work for the new company starting then.
All right, getting back to the Altair and Vega, did you work with Lindbergh on his Altair?
Well, yes, when he'd bring it in and we'd work on it and make any repairs or any alterations or anything like that. He never had it in so very much, but in other words, he had a canopy built there. It was made in the shop next to mine in the metal shop, and things like that.
But you worked a lot with Wiley Post.
Oh, Wiley Post. I did an awful lot of work with Wiley Post. Wiley and I were very close. We used to do a lot of different things for Wiley. One time he decided he wanted to fly without any landing gear, and we fixed his landing gear so he could drop it and fly the airplane and land on the belly of the airplane up in at Muir Rock Dry Lake. And any time that he ever came in, well, he'd always yell for me, and I'd be available for him, and he was quite a guy.
Well, now, let's review quickly. You were born in 97, and where were you born at?
I was born in Nova Scotia, at Sambro, Nova Scotia.
How do you spell that?
Sambro, S-A-M-B-R-O.
What?
That's right near Halifax.
Near Halifax. Mm-hmm. And did you go to school there in your elementary years?
No, I left there when I was about 5 years old and moved to Halifax. And I just barely started school in Halifax when we the whole family moved to Vancouver. And I went, I had all my schooling and was raised in Vancouver.
British Columbia.
Yeah.
And you complete high school, did you?
No, I graduated into high school and about that time got tired of school or something or other. Anyway, I quit and I went to work in a drugstore, and I was almost a druggist. But about that time, I enlisted in the Royal Flying Corps and served with the Royal Flying Corps in Canada for a year until I cracked up, and then it was about a year that I spent in hospital.
Now, this was an accident you had in a Jenny?
Yes.
Or a Canuck?
Yeah, well, in a JN-4.
JN-4. With an OX-5 engine, was it? Do you remember?
Pardon? OX-5, sure. Did they have anything else?
I don't know. And you had some elevator problems and...
Well, they discovered that the ball joint on the elevator had parted. We were stunting. There was no argument about that. But we never did pull out the one out because the elevator. We were on what they call early morning flying. Daylight, we used to sleep at the hangar, and in daylight we'd get up and get the airplanes out and get them warmed up and get them all ready for the cadets and one thing and another to come down in the morning. And one instructor in our squadron would take an airplane up for a test flight just for, well, they were crazy about flying anyway, and to see how everything was, and I just went along for the flight.
And you got very badly injured, and you were in the front seat, and you got very badly injured in the crash.
That's right.
And broke your...
I had my left leg pretty well smashed up, and I was bruised from head to foot, and my face was completely smashed in. They had to just put it all out and put splints up my nose and let it grow back together again.
Pretty tough. All right, then that ended your Royal Canadian Flying Corps.
I was in hospital for off and on for the best part of a year after that. That was in June 1918 when I cracked up. And I don't just remember when it was I was discharged, but sometime the next year I was discharged and returned to Seattle. Because my folks in the meantime had moved to Seattle from Vancouver, and that's where I was discharged to Seattle.
I see. And then what did you do from 1918 to 1927 before you went to work for Lockheed?
Well, 1918, I was still in hospital all 1918,
right.
Part of 1919. And then when I come back to Seattle, I went to work for Boeing in Seattle for... they were just finishing up on the tail end of some war contracts or some such a thing as that. And then about 1921, we came to California from Seattle. And on the boat is where I met my wife on the boat, and we come down and landed in, where was it, San Pedro, we don't know. San Pedro,
yeah,
really?
San Pedro.
That was in 1921.
And when were you married?
And then in 1922, we were married in about...
23.
Yeah, we were married in 23. 1922, I went to work for Douglas up on Wilshire Boulevard. And I worked on a Navy building pontoons and Navy... torpedo planes at that time. I worked on those. And then I worked on all of the round-the-world cruisers. We built the round-the-world cruisers, and I worked on all of those. And after that was over, there was another layoff.
Well, now, you were a practical engineer then.
I was, let's face it, I've been a mechanic all my life and always was. Never anything else but a mechanic.
So you didn't consider yourself an aeronautical engineer?
No.
You considered yourself a first-class mechanic.
I was a first-class mechanic, and as Lockheed would hire engineers, why, I'd train them to the aviation business.
In other words, the slipstick boys weren't too practical.
That's right. Want me to go on that deal?
Yes, go right ahead.
Well, things were kind of shy then, and that's when I used to go out and get anything I could get, and I mostly used to fill in the motion picture work, and work in the pictures off and on. You'd work for a while, and invariably in November, you'd get laid off for Christmas and nothing doing until next March or so. So that got monotonous after a while, so I finally went over to Lockheed and hired in at Lockheed in Burbank at 60 cents an hour. And, I guess that was, then, what year was that?
27, was it?
I don't really know.
Turn it off so we can see what the hell.
1927. That was a good year. That was the year I was born.
Well, a lot of good people were born that year.
You have any children?
We have one son. He is teaches the high school at Escondido. And we have four grandchildren. We have two grandsons and two granddaughters, and we got two great-grandsons and one great-granddaughter.
Oh, you're busy people.
Well, on the Vega, I believe Jack Northrop was one of the designers for Lockheed.
When I first went to work for Lockheed, Jack Northrop was the chief engineer there, and he had a lot to do with all the deals on the Vega, and a lot of the engineering and all the rest of it. And as they progress with all the different Vegas, where the Vegas come through, he had an engineer working for him. I just don't recall his name now, but he was the guy that had the most to do. He and Jerry Valtee had the most to do with the retractable landing gear. And we built a retractable landing gear and installed it on a Lockheed low wing, and that was the first retractable landing gear that was ever flown or ever built.
And yet you worked on all those airplanes and
helped
put the thing together and make it work after the engineers.
This first retractable landing gear was raised and lowered by cables and pulleys and one thing or another, and it just happened that I was the only guy that could make the damn thing work.
Oh, that's so common in it when the engineers get through with their ideas.
There was one day that the Army got interested in that thing, and they sent Captain Eaker. I guess he's a general or something like so. And so he wanted to fly it. So I don't think he had official permission, but he wanted to fly it. So they decided to let him fly it, providing he would take some Lockheed along with him to take whole possession of the airplane. Well, all fingers pointed to me because I was the only guy that could operate the damn landing gear. So I sat in the back seat and he got in this thing. They flew it and over Burbank, he raised and lowered the landing gear for motion pictures. And we flew down to San Diego to Long Island. And with the landing gear up and everything like
North
that.
Island.
North Island, yes. And when I circled around ready for a landing, and I saw we were going to land on our belly, so I had to kick him in the butt to get him to let the landing gear down. So he let the landing gear.
You already found the first problem with retractable landing gear.
You got to put it down.
And this is true, but let me say that this was really a complicated arrangement we had with pulleys and cables and all the rest of it. After this, we went to hydraulic, and we might have had some more difficulties. We didn't have any great difficulties after that. And at that particular time, this airplane was at was Long Island was a kind of a sensation down there because they'd never seen anything like that. And then we finally got back to Burbank okay, and landed at the factory at that time when we used to land.
Well, now that's the Burbank Airport now, is that correct? Or was that a Grand Central at that time?
Well, no. Located the same place that factory B1 is located now on Empire Avenue, alongside the railroad track. And we had a runway that paralleled the railroad right back between the factory and the railroad, and that's where we used to land and take off all our airplanes. And the Burbank airplane is now known as Burbank Hollywood. It was still in the same place it is now, and we never got to use that for quite a long time afterwards. But originally, we still had our own airport right at the factory.
And that was right alongside the railroad tracks, just on the other side of the graveyard.
Yeah. No, that alongside the graveyard is A1. That's over at the end of the regular airport.
I see.
I guess you're too damn young to know where the hell this was. Do you know where factory B1 is?
No, I don't.
No. Well, factory B1 is on Empire Avenue and San Fernando Road. It's on the corner.
Okay. That's
that was the original Lockheed factory. Just one little corner of it was only a little teeny place. And one part of it used to be a pottery factory where they used to make cups and saucers and plates and all that kind of stuff. And the factory was there. And then between that and the railroad track was a strip about maybe 1,200 feet long, just dirt graded, that we used to use for a runway. And we had a couple of run-up pads out there. And that's what we used for run-up and for land takeoff and landing.
Okay. Now, in 19... do you remember when Amelia got her first Vega?
I don't know what year it was. No, I haven't.
I believe it was 1929, because she flew it in the first women's air derby out of Santa Monica. Do you remember that?
That's right. But I don't remember. I wasn't have anything to do with it with on the flight she made out of there. The only thing that I had anything to do with her is... I can't remember if she had brought the ship back into the factory to install tanks or anything like that. You understand that at this time, when all that, we had about five pilots that had about five different airplanes that used to have these air races, the Bendix air races and so on, and every year these five maniacs would come into the service department there and have tanks installed. Now, we used to tear out everything on the inside of the airplane and build tanks and just have them in there that just there wasn't a space left for anything else but just gasoline. Now, this had to do with Wiley Post and Roscoe Turner. He used to do it in his Air Express. And Lee Schoenhart, he had one and did a number of them. I can't even remember all of the guys who used to do that. But every year, there were about five of them used to enter in this Bendix. And every year they used to do, and we used to work like beavers getting this stuff all ready for it. And the other, they come in the morning, and about five of them jump on you. And if you didn't work on the one guy's airplane, the other guy's mad at you. So I just said, the hell with them. They were mad at me all the time anyway. So I just did the best I could.
And Amelia was one of those who kept ringing
Amelia,
her up.
Amelia, no, she... I don't think she would. She wasn't. It was a different deal with the media. She wasn't. She used to go on her own deal. She wasn't in on the Bendix. The Bendix race. Have you heard of the Bendix race?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. She entered it a couple of times.
Well, I guess maybe I did put tanks in the media's, but this I don't recall because she was so damn nice that I only just remember the hard knocks mostly. See, that I got, and then. Ooh.
Now the Lockheed 10 was designed basically, who were the design engineers? Who was the...
Well, this was Hal Hibbert was the chief engineer on that. That was the first one that when Robert Gross took over the company, why, this is what they started in to build the 10. That was the first airplane they built. And Hibbert was the chief engineer on that, and I don't know who outside of him was on it. I think Kelly worked there at that time, but...
Yes, and Jimmy Gerstler worked there.
Well, Jimmy Gerstler worked. My original engineering department that I had was Jimmy Gerstler and Kelly Johnson and one other engineer. I used to have three engineers.
Do you remember who the other engineer was?
No. I don't know who he was. I guess he must have known something. I guess I didn't train him.
Well, now, the Lockheed 10 came out around 1934, wasn't it? I have the exact date,
well,
so it's not important.
I can't recall dates.
But in the meantime, you went over to Van Nuys and set up the service department for the Lockheeds, because Lockheed went out of the service business.
I was over at Van Nuys when they was starting to build the Electra, because there was about almost 2 years between the time that the old company went out of business and then I come back to Lockheed. Now, in this 2 years, while the new company took over and starting to build the Electra, and I come back with a new company at that time, I come back and I was hired as foreman of the final assembly on the Electra at that particular time. Now that's where you maybe got this thing. I better turn this off, because I was the only one who knew anything about airplanes at that time.
The only one that could make the gear work, huh?
Well, they had different gear on Electra. They had pretty well perfected then, because we had perfected the retractable landing gear on the wooden jobs, on a lot of the different airplanes we had. We had, like, Laura Engel, she had a low wing that had retractable landing gear, and Doolittle, he had one, and there was several of those that had perfected landing gear. You see, this airplane that Wiley Post busted up in Alaska, that was a Morphodite. We didn't have anything to do with that. Now, what he did was he come to Lockheed and he bought an old fuselage that we had hanging up in the ceiling that we never had used or never had flown. And we had a wing there that had been built but never completed or anything. And he took these two things and took it some damn place and built up this airplane that he had. And it was never engineered or a damn thing. And it was very unstable from anything we've ever known. It was either nose heavy or tail heavy or something like this. And the only way you could fly it was a lot of ballast, and even at that, he made a landing up there with the thing, and his only difficulty was that he took off again to get a little closer to the gasoline, and that's where he cracked it the second time, as I get it. I don't know if that's just the hearsay that I got, but...
Well, then you worked in the final assembly on the Lockheed 10 during the early years when it was being put together and sold to Northwest and to Pan American.
That was when the media come in and bought the Electra in there, and I worked on the Electra that she bought, and they used to take it over, and Paul Mance used to be her guiding angel over at the Lockheed Air Terminal. I think that at that time it was still Union Air Terminal, but now I'm not sure about that. But he was her aviation advisor, and used to have the airplane at his hangar over there, and we used to occasionally go over and do a little work, anything that she needed doing on any adjustments or anything like that. She used to make that. but we actually never had anything with the launching her on the flight or anything like that. That was Paul Mance's deal and everything like that.
Well, getting back to the final assembly of her airplane, I was told a story by the head of the fuselage shop at the time. His name escapes me. He lives up in Saratoga now. He said that things were very slow in the first part of 1935, and in order to keep his men from getting laid off, he had gathered together enough material, and he had was building up a fuselage without any specific orders from the front office to build it. He was moonlighting or taking the parts and necessary material out of the stockroom and whatnot without work orders in order to put together the fuselage. And or some stage during the construction of the fuselage, he had been given orders not to go any further until a firm order came in. Well, then the order came through on Amelia's, and unfortunately, he had already put on the skin around the windows and whatnot, and the order came through for no windows. And he had to drill out all the rivets and take the windows out and put on sheets where there were no windows. Do you have any idea?
No,
of that
I don't recall any of that, but I would say this is very likely it happened, because there was nothing about taking some skin off and put on a blank piece of metal instead of one with a hole in it. That was only just elementary. They could have stopped the windows up easy enough, and that might have been.
He did it all surreptitiously, and he got fired if they ever caught him.
I don't recall this. Turn it off and tell me who this guy was.
I'd have to look in my book.
Never mind.
he was the head of the fuselage shop. Now, on Amelia's airplane, she called it the Flying Laboratory, and she liked to give the press things about the differences in her airplane than the standard Lockheed 10. Now, of course, it was a 10E, which meant it had the Pratt & Whitney majors on it rather than the 10A or 10B. Well, 10B had the Wrights, I believe, and the 10A had the Pratt & Whitney Jr.
That's Lisa.
The cat's Lisa. But one of the things she talked about was she said she had magnesium parts in many places in order to lighten the airplane. Do you remember anything about that?
No, I don't recall that. I wouldn't doubt but what she had modifications like that on the airplane. But I don't remember. Well, that wouldn't be our function to install that, or my function to install those protector parts.
But what kind of magnesium parts would be suitable for airframe in those days? I can't hardly imagine
anything
except fittings.
Well, the only thing I could think offhand would be the wheels.
Yeah, because it couldn't have been anything major at all. Magnesium was too brittle.
They'd be non-stress parts, I suppose, or what maybe
little,
it would be.
Fittings or whatnot to attach something to, or something like that.
Well, for instance, seats. Maybe they had, maybe pilot seats. Maybe they were made out of magnesium or something.
Can you remember anything special about her airplane, or could you just talk about what you remember about her?
No, I don't. I don't remember anything special that I could say on about it.
It was pretty well a standard Lockheed 10E with the big engine.
Yeah, I would say it was very likely wasn't a standard Lockheed Electra, but it was it more or less was, yes.
Well, I know she had special instruments installed and
her
had
main instrument. Difference was that she had all different instruments, and all the interior of it was, of course, different because it was had tanks, it was full of tanks and all that kind of thing. It certainly wasn't like a standard airplane by any means.
I mean a passenger airplane.
No, that's right,
yes. Do you remember any difficulties at all you had with her airplane or any incidences?
You mean on the 10 or you're talking about the Vega?
On the 10. Or either one, for that matter, but especially on the 10. We'll stick
no,
with it for the moment.
No, I don't. we had difficulties with all airplanes, but nothing that outstanding on it I can remember.
Were you working, did you work on it when it was returned by ship from Honolulu after it cracked up on takeoff out of Luke Field?
As I remembered, I guess that I think I did receive all the pieces. And I think that we got all the pieces, and I think that we had, that I worked on the reassembly of it and all that kind of stuff, but I can't. It was just one of the other things that was happening at that time.
Do you remember that from working on it and